Okay, what's happening, people? Welcome to the Football Fans Podcast. Face Off. We're rebranding the podcast during these crazy times. We're calling it the Face Off. Those listening now by the usual means won't know that we are on Zoom, so I can see the faces of our guests here. We'll be doing a podcast every single week as per usual, but we'll be doing it obviously remotely in the times of lockdown. And we're going to rebrand the pod while we're doing it via Zoom a little bit as well. So before I explain what we're going to be doing in the coming weeks, let me introduce my panel for this week. We've got our Chelsea fan, Gabriel. Gabriel, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, good. Can't wait to get back to games. But apart from that, I'm good.
Well, good. We have our United regular, Marvin. Marv, talk to me.
How you doing, fella? I'm loving life, actually. Loving life in my own prison with my children. It's making me a better dad. So doing my best here.
So let me ask you quickly. Are you growing that beard because you just can't be bothered? You ain't got to impress anybody? Or do you not, like me, have any kind of means of cutting it?
To be fair, I started growing the beard before the lockdown. But I was going to shave it off at the end of March. But now barbers and everything is closed. I mean, who am I trying to impress? My wife sees me at my worst, so just let it roam free, to be fair. Do you know what I mean?
Amen to that. And we've got a special guest, been on the pod a few times before. You may recognise his voice and his face from AFTV. We have Mo. Mo, what are you saying, brother?
All good, man. Enjoying my life and enjoying lockdown, actually. You know, I do want the world to get back to normal, but making the best out of it whilst we're in this weird situation.
That's all we got to do, man. That's all we
Mo, this has probably been the best Arsenal's performed in the last...
Anyway. Right, okay. So what we're going to do going forward for the next few weeks is we're going to there's no games to talk about. We are going to focus on a Premier League iconic player or an iconic match. So every single week we'll alternate between picking out a player, past or present, from the Premier League era, or we will go for a really iconic Premier League game, and we'll focus on that. We're going to kick off with what's probably one of the most iconic games, I think, between United and Arsenal at Highbury, 2005. United won 4-2 at Highbury, but it was more known for goings on off the pitch rather than on the pitch. I think it was branded Tunnelgate between, obviously, Keane and Vieira. So we've got you, Gabriel, on. You're the neutral in this. And to give a bit of context to people that maybe don't remember that particular time, you were the champions of that season and you went on to retain the title that year. So that was just those 2 years. Just on the game, first of all, what do you remember of that particular game as a Chelsea fan?
I remember it really being a battle for second, which was quite a big step down for United and Arsenal. But at the time, like, we were quite clear ahead and it was clear we were going to win the league. I also remember it, there'd been so many, like, big, like, not so much good games, but, like, battles between, you know, the Van Nistelrooy thing had happened. You know, Keane had been talking about Vieira had been talking about Keane, Ferguson and Wenger. So there was this whole like, real, I guess almost toxic rivalry there. But I think that was the last, what I would say from my perspective, last top game that where the two teams were at a level. Because I think after that, a lot of transition happened. So Vieira, I think that was Vieira's last one, apart from the FA Cup final, but that doesn't really count. But Vieira moved on, King moved on not too long after. United went through a little bit of a mini slump. Arsenal was still in a slump from that era. So it was a last good game. And I think it also set a template or a blueprint down to how to beat Arsenal during that era, which was kind of be resolute, hang in there for their good period, which will probably be the first 20, 30 minutes of the game, and then hit them with dangerous counter-attacks. And I think Fergie kind of established that. I know we kind of jumped on the back of that. Everyone seemed to kind of do that. It seemed to be like the template, the formula to beat Arsenal. So, yeah, all in all. But, yeah, I also remember it for a John O'Shea wonder goal.
All right. We'll get into the detail of
But, yeah.
Mo, just generally, again, we'll get into the detail, but what are your memories of that defeat for Arsenal that day?
I'm one of those people that, you know, to manage my own happiness, when it doesn't go Arsenal's way, they just slip out of my mind. And obviously, unfortunately, we're talking about a game that didn't go Arsenal's way. But, you know, I think the memory, like many, many years on, of that game is the whole Vieira Keane dynamic. And, you know, Arsenal United was an incredible rivalry. Wenger Ferguson was a great rivalry within that. And there were a lot of good matchups, but it was epitomised by that Vieira Keane. And, you know, it was that moment in the tunnel before the game that really does stick in the mind. The detail of the game, you know, yeah. You know, since you asked me to come on and talk about this, I've obviously watched the highlights back and everything. And it's mad. Like, just, you know, one observation. We had Lehmann on the bench and we had Almunia in goal. Mm-hmm. And Almunia had a stinker, absolute stinker. I mean, like, to let John O'Shea chip you from like 20 odd yards, what were you doing? No man's land for two of the goals. It was in no man's land.
I was going to say, there was another goal as well that it was a full far thought as well.
Yeah, and I look at it now and I'm like, why was Lehmann not playing? And in a way, I'd love to go back to that day so I could understand the context around why was that Almunia playing and not Lehmann and stuff. But unfortunately, I just kind of feel like when you look at the two teams on paper on that day, United had some weak links, Arsenal had some weak links, but on the day, our weak links really, really let us down.
Marv, general first memories of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I, to an extent, I agree with D, but I'm pretty sure I could be wrong. But if, I mean, G's calling it a slump. If we didn't, I think Chelsea retained it the season after United won it. So I think he just needs to slow his roll about slump, right? That's the first thing I'll say. I also think it's one of those things, right? For me, I kind of get what G said in terms of, you know, when people were at different points. This is the last time that Arsenal and United were at level. But for me, it was one of the games that I sort of think about as how I used to like my football played, right? Fiery, passion, no one was shaking hands, rubbing heads before the game just because they saw each other on international duty. It was old school Highbury. The tunnel was tight, right? You couldn't swing a cat in there. I'm pretty sure we had... someone gets sent off. I feel like Sylvester.
Yeah.
I think Ashley Cole took a dive in that game as well, early. So
Yeah.
It was, for me, and it's not because United were good or whatever it was. It was just, it takes me back to why I loved the game back then and why I'm so moany at how lovey-dovey players are nowadays and how... personally, that fire and intensity, and it's largely down to the way players are nowadays, and you know, that passion is no longer with us, and that makes me quite sad to think about.
All right, so Mo, you mentioned what that game was most remembered for, which was the pre-match tunnel. It wasn't really a fracas; it was just kind of, it didn't really pop off, did it? It kind of was a bit of a war of words between the two captains.
Wow, it didn't pop off because Vieira didn't want it. Let's call a spade, right?
Listen. on all of this, let's not make this about you know, who wanted it and who doesn't. Do you know? I don't know if any.
Why not, bro? That's what we're here for.
Because let's be fair. Is anyone here into UFC?
Yeah, I love UFC.
Yeah, so you know, Khabib and Ferguson were due to fight, yeah?
Yeah.
And for the fifth time now in their history of failed fights, it hasn't happened. Right. And people are trying to do this in that conversation that, oh, Khabib didn't want it, that's why he's stuck in Russia, or, you know, whatever. And I just kind of think, you know what? These are two guys, Ferguson and Khabib, right? They're true warriors. They're not scared of anything. And the truth is, both of them will happily go and step into that ring. None of them trying to get out of it. They're two absolute warriors. That's how I see it. And when we're talking about Keane and Vieira, we are talking about in a different context here on a football pitch, not a cage. But these guys are two warriors. And I personally think that we can say that, oh, Arsenal fans can say, oh, Keane wouldn't want it. United fans can say Vieira wouldn't want it. The truth is, these guys didn't care. They would go at it and they were not the type to be intimidated. So I'm not going to...
Go on, G.
Has he frozen?
He's frozen.
Go on, say again. Froze.
Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
we can hear you. Can't see
you. Frozen. Yeah.
There you go.
Go on.
I said, as a neutral, I saw Vieira seem to want it when it was Neville, but when King came out, he didn't want it football. That's what I remember.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is, I don't think we didn't actually see. Well, I didn't see it. Maybe I was just focused on the main beef, but I didn't actually see too much of the Vieira Neville thing. I heard that all after the fact, right? And it all goes back. The rumours, it's all rumours, right, Mo? So, Mo, don't get offended. And don't say that I'm attacking Arsenal. But the rumours, and I haven't heard many people of the Arsenal camp deny what's been said by the Man United camp. But the rumours that I heard was it all dates back to the fact that Arsenal felt that Reyes was harshly treated at OT, and that the United players kicked lumps out of him. You know, if you look at the highlights of the game, it's probably accurate, right? And Vieira said to Gary Neville in the tunnel, like, "This is our turf. You're not gonna try that stuff here, right?" Neville being the weasel he is, but never fights his own battles. I don't think Keane was actually in the tunnel at that point. He ran off. I've got this idea, this mentality of him scurrying his hands like this, right? He ran off, told Keane. I don't know if Keane was just in a bad mood or whatever, but he came out, made sure Vieira knew what time it was, and Vieira knew what time it was and didn't want it. That's how I feel,
no,
right?
Look, you know, what actually happened in that game, it wasn't in the tunnel that Vieira started getting on at Neville. It was in the warm-up.
Right, okay.
You know? And then, as you say, Neville did do that thing of scurrying off and saying to Keane, "Oh, Vieira said this, Vieira said that." And in fact, don't take my word for it, I've got a quote here from Paul Scholes, yeah? So, Paul Scholes has said...
Snitched!
Yeah, check this out. He goes... Vieira said something to Gary Neville in the warm-up, which was crazy, really, said Scholes. A warm-up. Who's thinking about saying something or talking to another player, like, you know, in a warm-up? And then he said Roy felt that Patrick was trying to bully him, and I don't think any of us could be bullied. This is Scholes talking about Roy thinking that, you know, Neville was being bullied. And then he says, Gary came in the dressing room and told everyone and didn't know that Roy Keane was actually listening, he said. You know, Roy's getting his boots, having a drink and stuff, and Gary being Gary, saying, Vieira said this, Vieira said that to me, he said he's going to do this to me, he said he's going to do that to me. A real drama queen.
Little bitch!
Whatever you can say, this is Paul Scholes' actual words. He's called Neville a real drama queen. But whatever you want to say about Roy Keane, and I'm not gonna say anything about Roy Keane, because for me, as I say, Roy Keane was a warrior, just how Vieira was. But Gary Neville does not come out of this with any credibility at all, he comes across like one hell of a softie.
So, G, watching some of the clips yesterday, I found a very short clip of I hadn't seen before. It actually starts well back into the back of the changing rooms where you can't see anything, but you can hear it kind of going off. So, I think what everyone's been saying is kind of rings true in that this wasn't Roy Keane coming through and it popped off. This was happening from the changing rooms. So, I hadn't seen that before.
The warm-up.
What? From the warm-up. In the warm-up there. Vieira scored the first goal in that game. How much of what Roy Keane was saying to him, i.e. wait till we see you outside, wait till we see you on the pitch, or worse to that effect, do you think really revved up Vieira to think, okay, cool, you're on my ground now, let's go. Bang, 1-0, take that.
Yeah, you could see it in the celebration. You know what I mean? I know he only ran towards the crowd, but you could see it meant I'm the captain here, I'm the man here. You said you'll see me on the pitch, and I'm seeing you now. But it didn't last very long. I know you probably don't want to move on to that just yet, but it didn't last very long in that sense.
So, Marvin, one thing I noticed also about that tunnel bust up was the fact that everyone just seemed to be scared of Roy Keane, including the officials. The referee was trying his best to calm him down. But you can see even the referee was a little bit, he was saying to him like, come on Roy, calm down. But you could kind of see that he had the whole tunnel up. The Arsenal players looking at him like, what's wrong with this guy, sort of thing. What did you make of the kind of general reaction around Roy Keane by everybody else?
I think there's a couple of things, right? First thing is, no, I've read that Paul Scholes comment, right? But Gary Neville and Roy Keane both say something different. So it's about who you want to believe, right? Because
Roy Keane's consistent with what Scholes says.
No, because Gary Neville said in, I think it was Soccer AM, he said that it was the warm-up, there was a bit of mouth, but Vieira followed him as he went back down the tunnel and was calling him to say, that's not going to happen.
Neville.
And he claims that he basically was shouting as he was going in. So the players in the dressing room heard Vieira, as well as obviously Gary being a snitch. Like, I'm not denying that Gary's a snitch, but I don't think it was as simple. I don't think it's as simple as like Gary not seeing Keno in the room. Like, come on, it's like, it's not. I haven't been in the Highbury dressing room, but just by the tunnel alone, you know, space wasn't at a premium.
Where else is he going to be?
Exactly. I mean, in answer to your question, Jewel, though, I mean, we look at it totally differently, right? You're saying everyone was like, what's wrong with this guy? If I'm an Arsenal player, my captain is getting told what time it is and I'm just sipping on water, instantly my knees are now shaking, because basically the two talismen of the team are going at it. One wants it, one doesn't, right? And the bottom line is, like, it's not just the 22 people in the tunnel plus the officials that were scared of Roy Keane. The majority, like, Keane had that persona, right? I think both him and Vieira were ferocious competitors on the pitch. But I think Vieira was that person that when he crossed the white line and he did his business, he could be a nice guy. I don't think Keno really had that in him. So I think the difference was, I think probably Vieira was more calculated and thought, if this pops off now, then one or both of us aren't going to see the pitch. So let me just do my talking on the pitch, right? Whereas Keane didn't give a damn, right? Right now, I'm going to take your head off. If you want it, let me know and we'll go to town, right? And he didn't care if he was going to get a red or whatever it is. He was going to deal with it right there. And I think the calculation of Vieira wasn't just the red card. I honestly think, and this is not me popping shots, that King would have taken his head off. Simple as that, right? And I think the bottom line is, I think it was probably better professionalism by Vieira overall. But I know where I want my captain to be doing. And that was what Roy Keane did. Very simple as that. Because if I'm a Gary Neville now, I'm in the back with my shaky knees thinking, whatever goes on this pitch, this guy's going to run the show. Bottom line, right? Yeah, Vieira scored, blah, blah, blah. But as far as I'm concerned, any game where John O'Shea's going to chip the keeper, you know it was men against boys. Simple as that.
There was a face-off they did where they both kind of, you know, I think it was called Best of Enemies or something like that. Yeah. And I think Vieira did try to play it off as, I had him rattled. So once I had him rattled, I kept it quiet. But I'm sorry, I'm not buying it.
It's interesting because, you know, look, as an Arsenal fan, obviously, I watched Vieira. I love Vieira. Vieira he wasn't the really sort of person that would, you know, some people are like very macho. That, you know, they'll walk around with a bit of swagger and a walk, and they'll be spitting as they go, and they'll be like talking louder than, you know, all of that sort of stuff. You see it outside clubs every Saturday night, you know, lads who fancy themselves a little bit. Vieira was Gallic. You know, the Arsenal lads used to take the mick out of him for the way he used to run. Yeah, he wasn't what we relate to as a hard man. You know, like, the fact that he had no hair on his head.
He was just tall.
A skinhead haircut.
He was just tall.
He was just, yeah, he was just Patrick Vieira. It's just that he was a different beast on the pitch. But I hear what you're saying. Like, look, I think the best way to capture this is that if Roy Keane wasn't a footballer, he probably would have done some time behind bars because he would have been getting into scraps and all that sort of stuff. I don't mean that disrespectfully. I just mean that as his nature, right? I think we can all probably agree on that. That he's quite fiery like that. Whilst with Vieira, he was just like a very fierce competitor. I don't think he was that sort of person off the pitch. So for me, Vieira came in very calculated. He was aggrieved at what Neville had done to Reyes, and without any shadow of a doubt, he got kicked off the park by Neville. And he was protecting his player in his way. And that's not in a macho way. That's just in a case of, I'm just going to make sure that, you know, I'm telling you what I will and won't stand for on my turf. And when Keane started responding, I think, to me, Vieira had done what he wanted to do. He wasn't he didn't have Keane's card marked or anything. He had Neville's card marked. He went and said what he wanted to say to Neville. And when Keane got involved, Vieira is not really there to do all that macho stuff. The one thing I would say, Graham Poll, I don't know how tall he is. I don't know how much he weighs, yeah? But if Roy Keane wanted to go up to Patrick Vieira in that tunnel, Graham Poll can't stop him. No one else is stopping him. It was only Graham Poll. And I've seen it time and time, you know, when you're a teenager and your mate is
hold me back, exactly,
all of that stuff. We all know it. If you really, really want to get to someone, you get to them. The fact that Roy Keane actually said, I'll see you out there, shows that actually he wasn't a complete dunce. It wasn't that, oh, you know, Graham Poll saved Patrick Vieira. Roy Keane also didn't want to get sent off in the tunnel. He wasn't going to do anything. It was just mouth. After Vieira had done what he wanted to do and had the word with Gary Neville, he was fluffing the mascot's hair and drinking water. He was actually a lot more calculated than that. And I would even go as far as saying the fact that he scored had nothing to do with Roy Keane and anything in that tunnel incident. Maybe the celebration, it might have come out. But, you know, these are professional footballers. They go out there and do their job. So, look, you know, all of this fear factor about Keane, I think, is really, really overblown. Look, there's a lot of men on that Arsenal team, Sol Campbell, Lloren, for example. They're not going to be intimidated by one guy popping off.
All right, so just final thing. One thing I liked as well was the fact that there was so much foul language and there were so many kids around as well. There's so many kids around. If you look back at it, there's about eight players around. Another bit as well, Dennis Bergkamp, he comes to Patrick Vieira, puts his arm around him. He's like, I don't know what he says, but he's either saying to him, are you all right, mate? Are you all right? Are you all right? Or he's saying, look, if you need some help, I'm here. If it pops off.
The funny thing is, though, bro, right? The 2 points I'll make, right, is I get what you're saying about, like, Keane didn't really go for it. But I think it's about levels, isn't it? So it was almost like Keane came and said what he said, and that was Vieira to either meet him and then it's going to pop off or sip his water, right? And I think Keane was ready for everything. So I don't think it's one of those things. I agree that Keane didn't want to be like throw the first punch. But I guarantee if Vieira went there or even raised his voice, Keane would have met in the middle, Graham Poll notwithstanding, right? I think he would have called him out either way. But the other thing that I don't like what you said is you said he wasn't marking Keane's card, he was marking Gary Neville's card, right? And for me, he picked the weakest man in the room. Right, he marked the card of the weakest man, right?
So when is Gary Neville this soft? Honestly, this is news to me. You got Paul Scholes saying it, you got you, Marv saying it, you got Roy Keane saying it, Gary Neville is...
Let me tell you, Man United played Feyenoord years before, right? Andy Cole scored a hat-trick in that game, that's why I remember it. And Julio Cruz got into it and told Gary Neville, I'll see you in the tunnel. That was it. Said to Gary Neville, I'll see you in the tunnel. This is in Gary Neville's book, right? And you know what Gary Neville did? He went to Nicky Butt and goes, buddy, I'm sticking close to you. Julio Cruz just told me he's going to see me in the tunnel, right? This is not a strong man, right? Like,
if you're going to Nicky Butt, then this really tells me everything.
No, but Nicky Butt was a fierce competitor. You know what? I'd back Butt to take off Vieira's head as well. But what I'm saying is, it was that week, right? But I agree. And like, Jordan knows, and I've said it a million times, for me, that passion that Roy Keane showed is everything I miss in Man United now, right? So I would willingly, I sometimes, when I have a presentation at work, I watch that tunnel incident just to G me up, because I love it so much. It gives me that feeling of adrenaline. And I think it gave the Man United players that feeling of adrenaline. Come on, Mo.
Fair enough. But listen, the thing that I want to say is that, like, you know, what I'm trying to get across as an Arsenal fan that, like, knows Patrick Vieira and his style of play, no one will be able to name an incident where Patrick Vieira has got in trouble off the pitch.
No, agreed. He got more red cards than Roy Keane, you know?
Yeah, because he struggled to adapt to English football when he first came here. And he actually wanted to leave the Premier League because he was just getting sent off all the time. But my point is exactly this, that Vieira on the pitch was different. Whilst Roy Keane, he's having bust-ups, you know, getting sent home from World Cups and having bust-ups with people and all of this sort of stuff. That's my point here. Roy Keane is not the same as Patrick Vieira. Roy Keane is fiery, like, you want some, let's flip and have it. And he doesn't have that level of control that Patrick Vieira did. Patrick Vieira was calculated and he had something to say to one person, and then fine. If you want to go after him after that, that's why I feel like you're talking about sipping his water. That, to me, that wasn't a sign of weakness. That was a sign of, actually, it's more calculated than it just being a bust-up. But ultimately, he doesn't back down when he's on the pitch.
All right, so moving on to the actual game now, guys. I'll start with you, G. It finished 4-2 in the end. One thing that I noticed as well, actually, let me start with Mo because it's an Arsenal question. One thing that I noticed looking back on the highlights was the fact that Arsenal's team was big. We had a really big team. Looking at the tunnel and then walking out, we had players that were of size. And also, I missed Highbury because I think Highbury really worked in our favour in so many ways. What are your memories of that particular era and that season? Dee mentioned earlier on that it probably was the last year where Arsenal and United were on a level in terms of the two teams battling out to be the best, although Chelsea had come along. But what are your memories of the Arsenal team, Highbury, and despite losing, how competitive Arsenal were that day?
Yeah, obviously we were very competitive. I just feel like, you know, the story of that game, the frustration that I have is that, like, we had such an incredible team, but our weak links were significantly weaker than United's. We had Seagon and Almunia. And, you know, Almunia, that game, seriously cost us. And that's my frustration, that it's all well and good. I mean, if you look at United's team that day, for example, I'd say what the weakest link might be Silvestre, Darren Fletcher, but at that time, even those guys could do a job, could do a proper job. But for me, Almunia fell short of even that standard. You know, we had some players like Flamini. He was no world beater, but he still did enough. He still did a job. But ultimately, I think that's my memory. That's my frustration, that these guys really did cost us on that game.
I agree.
Don't let United fans hear you say that Darren Fletcher's not a world-class player. I mean, in retrospect, he's become like this withered all of a sudden. But yeah, I agree. And like, another one to that list would be John O'Shea, who was a weak link. I mean, look what he ended up doing.
But I mean, look, to be fair, that 89th minute and, you know, him in that position, it's the probably best goal of his career. I don't mind. That's an aberration. That's completely, completely random. That's always going to happen in football, you know. But, you know, I mean,
One thing I remember the game and watching the highlights, Marvin, it reminded me of defensively how bad Arsenal were that day. Arsenal were really, really poor that day. Going forward, we were causing all kinds of problems. No issue there at all. Defensively, we were really, really poor. What are your memories from a United perspective of that game? And do you feel that you were the better team over the 90 minutes?
I mean, my issue really is with Mo just pinning it on the weak link.
Don't get me wrong.
You had Henry on the pitch, you had Bergkamp on the pitch. I can't recall, I wouldn't say something definitely stands out to me as a Seagon error. Fair enough, Almunia was involved. We had Roy Carroll started that game. We had just as many weak links as you did. As far as I'm concerned, it comes down to one thing and one thing only, and that's heart, right? Like, we had it more than you. Whether our players are shit or not, they've got a bit more heart. Like, if you haven't got an Henri, a Bergkamp, a Vieira on the pitch, then I'm going to say to you, fair play, it's a weakened side. But I think net-net, we probably had sort of the same amount of good top-draw players and then below par players, right? But for me, in terms of where I was at with the game, I think, you know, for me, I think a lot of the problems were down the left-hand side. Gabby Hines had a good game when he was there. And I thought, actually, what I loved about the way that United played was, I think, at Highbury, to your point, you go 1-0 down in that cauldron, a lot of teams would have withered and died, right? And Arsenal would have gone on and won at a canter, because I think Vieira scored pretty early on, right? But for us, we just kept playing our game. Everyone did. Scholesy had a great game, G, you'd be pleased to know.
Yeah, he did.
So, like, I just thought we wanted it more. And I think
you say that. Come on. Listen, you got a lucky Ryan Giggs deflection. The referee denied Perez a Stonewall penalty. No, Cole dived as well. He got that one right. Rooney should have been sent off that game as well. And you're giving me this flipping, oh, it was hard and all that. Come on, leave off. It's the typical story of United with Graham Poole.
I tell you where I draw the line, right? Is when people talk about lucky deflections, like it's almost like, oh, it's come off that guy's legs. You know what? Shouldn't take it, right? It came off his legs. It's not a clear and true strike.
In snooker, they would apologize.
Let me tell you, yeah. We definitely deserved it more than you. We were away. We played to the final whistle, hence why Don O'Shea got it. When we were 3-2 up, you're right. You guys didn't want it enough. Like, you could easily have equalised, right? So for me, that's why I'm pinpointing a portion of it on Hart. Because at 3-2 on your own ground, you guys didn't push us to the end. To the point where we were letting our, you know, to your point, our weaker links cheat your keeper. Do you know what I mean? Ronaldo had an excellent game as well that day. But if you go back and look at that, a lot of the goals that we scored was where Arsenal were putting in like last-ditch tackles when they didn't need to. And a lot of it was them following the ball instead of being sensible positionally. So it goes back to what George said about the fact that forget weak links and all that sort of conversation. The back line was suspect. The back line's been suspect for years. And actually, what I would encourage you to do, and I would say, I don't know how many times people have watched the tunnel bust up, right? But I've probably contributed to a large portion of those times. If you look at that tunnel bust up, the one person that wanted to knock Keane's head off in the tunnel, man?
Amuna.
Seagun, watch him. He watches Keane dead in the eyes the whole time. And I reckon, sometimes it goes back to that school thing where you said about hold me back. I think Seagun in his mind was saying, I dare you to start on me.
I'm
having it right now. So for me, I think a few of your players could have actually taken a leaf out of your weakest links book because he was the one that was really up for it, right? I think it's unfair that you pinpoint it because everyone, like you talk about Man United fans and what they say, every Arsenal fan licks Henri and Bergkamp's ass, apart from Jude. He's not a Bergkamp ass licker, right?
I just said I'm not.
you better be, Jude.
Right? Like, as far as I'm concerned, those two players on the pitch, Silvestre on the pitch, I would have expected. I was worried when I saw the lineup. So especially at Highbury.
The best goal in that game for me was Ryan Giggs' goal. Because if you look at the build up, it was a good crossfield.
Oh, you just said that was a deflection.
It was a deflection.
It was. But what I like about that goal was Rooney's touch. Rooney's touch the goal up was absolute class. That for me, would you agree that was prime Rooney? That was Rooney.
Prime Rooney was being on a yellow card, then swearing at the referee and not being sent off, even though he should have. That's prime Rooney to me.
You know what, Mo? I bet you love the game as it stands now, right? You love the fact that people apologise to refs and exchange shirts at halftime. You love all that gentlemanly behaviour, don't you? It's probably a bit of swearing here and there.
I don't think I've ever had a worse insult than someone accusing me of enjoying half-time shirt changes. That is deep. I can't believe you've said that to me.
All right, look, I didn't want to cause that much offence, but what I'm saying to you is, if anyone gets sent off in those days, if a person got sent off for swearing at the ref, I think that would have been a bit harsh, right?
No. Rooney definitely got a lot of leeway with referees, let's just say, for swearing.
Oh, you're talking generally.
Anyone that's played football knows you can swear on the pitch, but you can't swear at people. You know, referees will even come in and say to you, yeah, you can, like, you miss a shot, you can say, oh, F that or whatever, but you can't say it literally to an opposition player. You can say it to your own team, but you can't say it to an opposition player or the referee. Rooney did that to the ref. And got
you know what? I personally think there's a distinction here, and I can't recall the actual game they're talking about. But D is right. Rooney was a swearaholic, right? But I think Rooney just used to swear. I don't think it was often at the ref, like you're effing this, effing that.
It was Marv.
I think he would say F this, F that, F this, right? But my point still stands, right? Yeah, he's got form for it, but in my mind, swearing at the ref is a minor.
He definitely got like an England golden boy, golden ticket. He'd do it all the time. Like, and I remember, like, he swore in a camera. Was it against like Wigan or West Ham or something?
West Ham, he got banned.
I felt because it was furious. Is that what's going on here?
I was furious too. And you know what? The thing that does my head in, right? And I know we're digressing a little bit, and I know I'm going to get some criticism for this, but bring it on. I don't care, right? It's all this talk about kids around. Oh, there's kids around. There's kids watching. Anyone that's been on the terraces, right, knows if you're going to bring a kid to the game, right, if you're going to, like, the kid's going to hear all sorts of things worse than what the players are saying. So for me, right, if I bring my kids to a game and someone's effing and blinding next to me, I'm not going to say to him, oh, excuse me, mate, I've got my kids here, right? As far as I'm concerned, those parents have made a conscious effort. Well, if consciously they've known that their kids are going to be subjected to some profanities in the air and have decided to take their kids to the game. So all these kids, and plus half of those kids are the kids swearing anyway. Sat at Old Trafford being very close to the away fans, and some of the things I've heard those kids say to me is unthinkable. So I don't care.
What about the innocent kids who are watching at home on TV, Mark?
Yeah, they apologised.
But I don't think it's a shame. Don't you think it's a shame
that a parent will have to make a choice? Say again?
Don't you think it's a shame that a parent will have to make a choice that, you know, I maybe want to try and bring up my kid in a certain way, you know, could be lovely church-going family, and, you know, they don't cuss at home and all that stuff, and they have to make a choice. Either, you know, I can go and enjoy football with my child, and they unfortunately pick up swearing, or I don't. I just don't think it's nice for someone to have to make that choice. And I know it's a bit of a stretch here, but, you know, swearing is not something you'd expect, you know, someone to do in society when there's children around. I know football grounds are kind of a melting pot, but if that happened at the post office, I think it'd be fair for someone to say, excuse me, can you not use that language for my child's here? So why should a football ground be any different? And the problem that I have with kind of, oh, that's the way it is, so it's so tough, that's the way it is. People could have made that excuse for a hell of a lot of other things. People could have said that to black people, to brown people.
I take the point, and I don't know if it's right or wrong. I don't want to make a mountain of a molehill, right? But as far as I'm concerned, right, if you look at the biggest sports in the country, right, football is the biggest, right? And I have said it a million times, right? And it's not that the way it is or whatever, but the fan base, personally, in what I've seen, has the most feral fans, in my opinion. I've been to rugby games. I've been to cricket with my dad. Like, the fan base is totally different. And I would go out on a limb and say, a guy that goes to watch England versus the West Indies, that goes to see a Six Nations game at Twickenham, if he's the same guy that goes to a Chelsea home game, the behaviour of that person at three different sporting events is totally different. It's a culture that I don't love, but it's a culture that I don't think changes. And I think people just need to come to terms with the fact it's a feral sport. Like, I've been to Wembley and watched an NFL game and drank about 4 or 5 pints because the organisers at Wembley know that NFL goers are going to be able to drink and not kick lumps out of each other. As soon as it's time at Wembley for an England game or an FA Cup final, beers are stopped served because everybody is aware of the situation. So to my point is, I don't like it, but it's the way it is. And it's unfortunate that parents have to make that choice, but that is what they have to do. And I've been open. I've said it to my wife a million times, right? Like, I would love to take my kids to games when they hit like 5, 6 years old, but I don't think I will. When they hit 11, 12, where I can have a better conversation and they're just more aware of the climate that they're in, I'm going to take them to as many games and they're going to know people are going to swear. But as a parent, I'm going to be that disciplinarian that says, whatever you hear on those terraces, those people are not to be mimicked or copied, right? Mm. And that's just the way you've got to do it.
But whether it was swearing, whether it was fouling,
you got away with a lot.
He just Rooney just got away with a lot. That's the point.
He did. Yeah.
Whether it was diving 100%. in the game beforehand, that probably would have the only reason what United were bragging about breaking the record, but like that game was extremely fortunate. Like
100%.
Rooney so was this.
What, you're going back to the 49 now, G?
The 49, yeah.
Oh, that was the game before. They're the two Arsenal losses to United that scar me the most. The 4-2 at home are disgusting, and the 49 game. The 49 game was, we'll do that game in a few weeks' time. That was.
But what's the common denominator, Jord? What is the common denominator in both of those games?
Really? Well, you're going to say in the 4-2 that Rooney's a common denominator. He should have got sent off.
I'm saying really, really poor officiating in United's favour. I mean, look, history has happened. It's happened. I've come to terms with it, but you cannot deny it.
I've seen you on Arsenal TV, right? And you've come across on Arsenal Fan TV as the most level-headed and rational person, right? The rest of them just lose their heads 85% of the time. If you go back to that old rhetoric of United had the refs in the pocket, blah blah blah, that's why they all won the league, and you're just like the rest of them. And what I will say is,
come on, Marv,
I will absolutely endorse the fact that in the Premier League, the teams on top, decisions that probably shouldn't go their way. And I would say, if you look at Liverpool's season this year in particular, a lot of things that have gone their way, if Liverpool were the Liverpool of 5-10 years ago, wouldn't have gone their way. I think it would just be...
The 50-50s go your way.
The 50-50s go your way, Jordan. And the problem is, and this is more at G than you, Mo, but the 50-50s go our way, and we were just on the top for so long, right?
Nah.
And the 50-50s looked like it was 90-10. Simple as that.
No, listen, look,
please.
I don't blame referees a lot. I really do say, if you're good enough, the ref doesn't matter. If you've scored 5 goals and the ref gives away 2 penalties against you, you win 5-2, you still win the game. I don't like to blame referees. But let's ask Gabriel here. As a complete neutral, I don't know what your memories are like of that 49 game.
Gabriel is not a neutral. 4-2. Gabriel is not a neutral.
No, here he is, because he hates Arsenal and United. So he
hates Man United more, I'm telling you.
That's just the hallmark of a good human being. Everyone hates United more. But my point is, come on, Gabriel, if you've got a memory of those two games, is it unfair of me to make the referee a talking point in these two specific games?
The 49 one, definitely. This one, it's difficult when you lose 4-2, because United had a player sent off as well. And they still went on to win. But a
89th minute goal. I think that the 4-2 isn't a true reflection of the game. A 3-2 is. The 89th minute goal is that gung-ho, you know.
Mo, let me just say two things, right? You've said, the ref's in the pocket. Oh, it's an 89th minute goal, so it doesn't really count. Like, you're saying stuff.
No, it counts. It counts. But there's a context to a game, right?
No, Mo.
Marv, tell me this. If Arsenal were currently, if we had won 3-2 at Old Trafford in the first leg and you were winning 4-3 at Old Trafford in the first leg and you were winning 3-2 here, and before John O'Shea scores that goal, we're going through and away goals. Do you think he ever scores a chip at Highbury from 20 yards? I mean, it's not happening. My point is, we had gone gung-ho, all of them running up the pitch to try and salvage something for the game. And fair play to John O'Shea. That is his, best goal he's ever scored.
Statue, Marv.
Well done to him.
The funny thing is, do you know what I'm going to do after this call? I'm going to find John O'Shea scoring a better goal. I don't like Mo's tone. It's almost like he's scored the best goal he's ever got to score in his whole life. Like, should put on
listen,
a we don't John put goals O'Shea, on plaques. We put trophies on plaques, right? It's simple as
John
that.
John O'Shea is as much of a goal scorer as Gary Neville is a fighter. That's the
No, I totally agree. I totally agree. But the bottom line is, Mo, I don't like your tone. Like, we made John O'Shea better than he was. He wasn't good.
But he was as much as a defender was as Gary Neville was a fighter as well.
Oh jeez. All right, listen.
The game John O'Shea was the under 21's captain for ages, reserve team captain. He came in. He's everything that makes a good squad. Someone that can come in, do his job, loves the club. Hmm. That doesn't happen anymore. So I won't hear a bad word against John.
All right.
Do you see him at Sunderland till I die, Mo?
Yeah, he didn't really. I did. But listen, once you leave United, you're out of my hands. Like you're in God's hands after that. Right, I can't control what you do.
So just to wrap up, guys. Final question. As I mentioned, that probably was the fixture that was the last real. As I can remember anyway, real battle between those two giants there. Very briefly.
FA Cup.
That wasn't really a battle. It was an awful game, first of all.
It was, yeah.
It was an awful game.
Who had the cliches?
Who had the last laugh that day, Mo?
In what game?
The last big game between the two, Arsenal United FA Cup final. Who had the last laugh that day? I can't remember who he was, but I saw him sipping some water after that too, you know.
You know what? It says a lot about Arsenal when they consider FA Cups as last. We deal in leagues here, Sunshine. We deal in leagues, right? As simple as that.
So what?
That was a crazy lucky game as well.
It was.
Well, listen, if you're dealing in leagues, you're Liverpool's dealer then. Because they're taking it, mate.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I'm campaigning for a cancellation of the Premier League this year. So let's not count our chickens yet.
One thing to say was that the two teams, Arsenal more so, have been in massive decline since that year. United are in pieces now, but they've won some serious trophies between that game and today. Just briefly, guys, Marv, I'll start with you. How does watching that game as a United fan, just generally, the rivalry, you'd have Ronaldo, Rooney, you know, Ferguson was in charge. How does watching that game make you feel in the context of being a United fan here today?
Yeah, I think I've said it to you before, Jordan. I said it earlier, right? Like, essentially, I don't go to the gym as much as I like to, but I used to go to the gym at a certain time to watch Premier League years, just to watch the United of old, right? Because the United that I know now is a shell of what it was. And it makes me, it's a bittersweet, right? Because it brings back all those fantastic memories of being a United fan when we were on top, but not just on top, but playing good football, able to attract the best players and actually able to grow up some of England's best talent, right? And now we're absolutely a shadow of that squad. I do hope that we get back to that. And, you know, we saw some green shoots before the league or before football came to a screeching halt. But, yeah, it makes me sad. I mean, I'm hopeful, and I've said this to you before as well, Jordan, you know, I've got an 18-month-old and a 3-year-old, and I just hope by the time they make it to sort of secondary school where the pants really goes up, football pants really goes up levels, that United are back into their rightful space as one of the most dominant clubs in English football.
Same question to you, Mo. Watching that game and the team we had, Arsenal now are not in a good place, man. How does it make you feel watching that game?
Nothing's changed for Mo, though. They weren't winning leagues or trophies then. They're not winning leagues or trophies now. Nothing's changed.
Can Mo ask the question, please?
We are a shadow, absolute shadow of that team. And honestly, man, it's depressing because I just kind of feel like, you know, when I think about the fact that, how many years has it been since you've won a league? We're talking about 16 years or something. It's crazy how time creeps up on you like that. I can't believe that. And I think the thing that's really sad for me is I can accept that in the spirit of competitions, you know, you have a spell where you're on top and then other times you don't, you know. But the fact that I see no green shoots of us getting back there, I see no shoots of that fire, that ambition. I think for me, I can't see any real light at the end of the tunnel. Being really honest about it, if I had to put my life savings on who will win the league next, Arsenal or United, I'd say United. You know, I think next season Arsenal could easily be the better team than United because of management and that sort of thing. But in terms of who's going to win a league next, who's going to strive for that and really have that ambition, it's probably going to be United more so than Arsenal or even Chelsea, for example, because of the ownership and the culture at the clubs. And that's my biggest problem with Arsenal. That's what I miss the most. Not so much any one of those players, even though obviously I do miss Bergkamp, I do miss Henri, Perez, Vieira. It's David Dean and someone like him who's got the direction of the club, you know, who's a bit of a visionary. That's what I miss the most.
I hear that. And G, again, as a neutral, as a Chelsea fan, that was a time when Chelsea was born, really. Let's have it right.
You've been waiting for that one, haven't you?
Yeah, I have.
Interestingly, I think that's when G became a Chelsea fan as well.
as an outsider, I mean, your team aren't doing anything great at the moment, but you've in that time from then to now, you've had the better, what is it, 15 years or how many years of the clubs. As an outsider, what do you just briefly make of, because for years you would have been the outsider looking at United and Arsenal thinking, I wish that could be my club.
Yeah.
So does it make you as a neutral fan a bit sad that kind of rivalry or any kind of rivalry, I mean, we've seen a little one with Liverpool City happening, but we're not seeing proper rivals. How does it make you feel watching that game?
Yeah, no, you make a good point. I mean, it's hard for me to say this and I'll probably never repeat it, but I was scared of that Arsenal team. There were periods where we couldn't beat, like, 9 out of 10 games you'd outplay us, but then even if we outplayed you, you'd still find a way to win. Like, that Arsenal team was dangerous. And then that rival with United, it's never really been replicated. The City and Liverpool rivalry, I mean, Henderson tries to talk it up every now and again, but it's kind of friendly. Like, you know, I see Pep and Jurgen Klopp and they give each other high fives and they slap, you know, it hasn't got the same effect. I guess you could say maybe the closest to it was the Jose and Benitez, but then Benitez wasn't on the same level of Jose in terms of competing for the highest trophies all the time. So, I mean, I would like to see a rivalry like that back, just preferably with my club rather than with you guys again. And I think that both guys have talked about green shoots. I could see United coming back because I think they will spend enough money until they get competitive again.
Exactly.
I just can't really see Arsenal doing it for a little while. I mean, well, there's no evidence of it for me as of yet. Maybe I'm underestimating Arteta and he'll have something different to say next year, but there isn't anything for me to suggest that Arsenal are anywhere near getting back to that.
Gents, thank you very much. What I want from any listeners, and in fact, you three can chip in now, I've got a long list of fixtures that we're going to try and get through during this lockdown period of games, iconic games. So tweet us, Facebook us, Instagram, let us know any real iconic Premier League games that you want us to discuss, and we'll make sure that we'll try and get a fan from those clubs, and we'll try and get a neutral on and have some fun looking back at games during a period when, for me, it was a lot more fun. I'm not saying that my team is rubbish, but the games were just so much more fun, even the ones without my team. So let us know any kind of games you've got. Mo, Marvin, Gabriel, cheers for your time, guys. Thank you very much for coming on. Don't forget to subscribe.
Gee, oh, dude, I thought you were going to allow us to chip in. I was going to say...
Go on, quickly.
Liverpool, Newcastle, the 4-3... 4-3 Stan Collymore winner?
The first one, yeah.
Love that. And obviously United, City... United City 4-3. I was at that game when Owen scored the winner on that one.
Yeah. The Bellamy one. Yeah. The Bellamy ruined Ferdinand.
Yeah. I knew you'd point that out, and that's absolutely spot on. But I like the way you pointed it out. Yeah.
What about the City QPR one?
Oh yeah. That's an iconic game. Yeah. We can do that. Mo, any spring to mind?
You know that lovely banner, Old Trafford Champions section.
Don't worry, that's next. Don't worry.
Was the game iconic?
It was. And another iconic game as well that I think you should get Marv on for is City United 6-1 as well. That was
All right. Screw it. Let's have the Arsenal United 8-2.
I'm just being spiteful.
Let's have the 8-2, bro. Let's have the 8-2. I was at that game as well.
By the weak links in that game. But anyway, no, right. I'm being spiteful there. 5-4, Arsenal, Tottenham. I think there's some North London derbies that would be really, really good to cover. not least the 5-4 Arsenal and the one where it was 2-2, but we won the league at White Hart Lane as well.
What one was the fourth? Was it a 4-4 when Bentley scored that world league?
That was cup.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
That was at our place.
Anyway, let us know what you guys want us to talk about and we'll make sure we get them in. We're on Spotify, subscribe to us via iTunes or what's it called now, Apple Music, whatever it's called, and also Audio Boom. We're across Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Gents, thanks for your time. Till next week. Peace.